proceed to the fifth case, the United States versus Freeman and Waters. Mr. Mazak?
Good morning. May it please the court. May it please this honorable court counsel. Michael Mazak on behalf of appellant Tammy Waters. Your honors, this appeal stems solely from the sentence handed down to Ms. Waters of 360 months, the statutory maximum, for her actions involving her son. This is a consolidated matter. Co-defendant Raymond Freeman's counsel has filed an Anders brief. Ms. Waters is engaged in several sexual acts with her son over the span of a year. These acts included sexual intercourse with her son, as well as directing her son's sex acts between her son and her boyfriend at the time. These acts were filmed and kept at Raymond Freeman's home, where they were discovered by a neighbor and turned over to authorities. Ms. Waters cooperated with authorities, entered a blind plea. This appeal targets the procedural and substantive portions of that sentence. Procedurally, the Section 3553A factors for Ms. Waters were not effectively considered. In addition, the district court did not adequately explain why a first-time offender in this case would get a statutory maximum sentence. In addition, substantively, the sentence serves an excessively punitive function, handing down a sentence that exceeds similar defendants at a time when the guidelines themselves are being challenged in other circuits. With respect to the 3553A factors, the defendant's or the appellant's history and characteristics were not effectively addressed in this case. Although there was a brief mention that because sex offenders tend to become sex offenders, that somehow justified or took care of that 3553A factor, this particular defendant has a horrifying history of being abused personally. She lost her parents at a very early age. She was living with her sister until age 12. That sister was killed. She wound up living with another sister. That's where she was raped at times. She was beaten, abused. She was homeless. However, there was no discussion of this history and how it factors into the decisions that she made when her son began asking her about sex and where babies came from, was the specific language in this case. Secondly, in terms of 3553A2 factors, which is essentially the main reason for the lengthy sentence, that she was a danger to the community and that this had a deterrent effect. With respect to her being a danger to the community, she has no history of sexual abuse prior to this. She had two daughters. She interacted with other children. There were neighbors' children. She had direct contact with all
of her daughters. Were removed from the home, and she lost parental rights as a result of sexual misconduct, not against the two girls, but in their presence.
Right. Well, that particular incident, in this record, that incident was described as her and a boyfriend outdoors, and the children walked in on that. There was no criminal charge with that particular incident. It was while she was living in a shelter for battered women, and at the time she was asked by DCFS whether she thought her kids would have a better opportunity in life if they were taken away from her. And given the fact, given her history and how, what led up to that point, she decided that the kids would have a better chance to succeed in life if it weren't living there. So with respect to that incident, although it does involve a sexual act, she was involved with her boyfriend in a sex act, it took place, they were both consenting adults, and the children themselves, one of them was an infant, the other one was five. The children were in custody of someone else at the shelter, and they were returned to her when this was taking place. So as far as that history, I understand that it does show that she lost her children, but it wasn't it's not a history of sex abuse. And then as far as her, you know, her being a danger to the community, one of the things that is challenging about this case is the way that the sentence was handed down. There's a lot of language that seems to indicate uncertainty. The judge, you know, said things like, the PSR doesn't explain you to my satisfaction, and there's nothing in your background that would offer an explanation. And most importantly, I'm at a loss on what to do with you. And then all of a sudden comes this 30-year sentence. So from a danger to the community standpoint, and it seems as if this sentence was handed down without a proper explanation as to why she deserved these 30 years. The Saxmeyer case, for instance, in the Seventh Circuit, has said that judges can't order a sentence like this with their thumb on the scale favoring a guideline sentence. The sentence does fall within the guideline, but it seems as if there was no proper explanation as to why a sentence within the guidelines was warranted, you know, especially considering language like, I'm at a loss on what to do with you. It doesn't seem like this procedural requirement was satisfied. And so one of the things that seems to be missing is a psychological evaluation or some sort of mental evaluation as to how much of a deterrent effect something like this would have. If she were predatory or were found that she was a danger to the community down the road, then a deterrent, 3553A2 deterrent factor would be justified. We simply don't have that. The district court could have, for instance, ordered an independent evaluation like this. It wasn't done.
Mr. Mazak, did the defense seek such an appointment?
Not at district court, no, Your Honor.
No, that's my. Seems to me, I hear your argument, I think,
right,
clearly, but I just have a little bit of a loss why, if that would have been one of the strongest positions to take, why it wasn't advanced at.
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't know why that argument wasn't made, but it could have been suggested by the court, particularly if the deterrent factor was the most important element of the sentence. And I know that it wasn't, there was no evaluation by the district court.
The age of Ms. Waters?
I believe she was 42 or 43 when this happened. She was attending college at the time, and there is reference to the fact that as far as 3553A factors, her mental state, the judge also mentions that the fact that she went, there seems to be no mental issues with Ms. Waters. However, that essentially relies upon the fact that she graduated from high school. There's no history of mental evaluation at all for Ms. Waters.
There was never any suggestion that she had any sort of a mental health issue that inhibited her ability to understand the wrongfulness of her conduct.
To a certain degree, although when she was asked at the district court why she did this, she couldn't comprehend or even explain why this happened. Or why she was doing this. She herself, the only explanation she had was when she explained the origin of this, which is the statement from her child, you know, where do babies come from, and the beginning of the conversations about sex. We can sort of assume that, you know, because of that, there are certainly issues because of that and because of her history of sexual abuse that this led to some horrible, horrible decisions and acts, and criminal acts, certainly. But in terms of her sentence,
there's a real difference between a depraved course of conduct and a mental illness. If there had been any suspicion that she had some sort of psychiatric disorder that deserved evaluation and weight in the course of the sentencing proceeding, that evaluation should have been asked for or conducted independently.
I agree, Your Honor. I'm sorry. It appears I'm out of time, but I would, as far as that goes, I would just say that she was in a position where nothing like that could. She at no point would she know that she had any sort of mental issue or any sort of psychological evaluation. She wasn't in a position to to have that done in any way. I don't know why it wasn't asked for at district court. So at this point, we're asking for the sentence to be vacated and remanded.
Thank you, Mr. Mazak.
Your Honor.
Mr. Cox? What was the government's position, Mr. Cox, at sentencing on the, if any, on the length of the sentence?
What was the government's? The government asked for 360 months. They asked for the statutory maximum, yes.
You did ask for
it. Yes. Of course, in this case, Your Honor, the statutory maximum was actually lower than the calculated guideline range, which in this case essentially was off the chart.
Right.
Would have been level 46 if there even if that level existed. So there are many factors, of course, that drive the sentence in this particular case. I didn't do the sentencing. I am present for the appeal here. But as an observer, one who wasn't there, I think I can stand back somewhat like the court and look at what Judge McDade did in this particular sentencing case. And it seems to me that actually what Judge McDade did in this case is a paradigm of what we want district court judges to do. He did consider the 3553A factors. The guideline range was properly calculated. No one disagrees with that. His statement to the defendant about the pre-sentence report doesn't give me an understanding of you is an expression of essentially the terrible position the judge is put in to decide the fate of a person who's committed a crime. And he's got a lot of facts here about what the crime was that was committed, background information about the defendant, whether there's a personal history or whatever, but there's no explanation that is satisfactory for the kind of conduct that this defendant engaged in against her 7-year-old autistic son over the course of at least a year, bringing her own sex partner in and then filming it. And then trying to explain that she did this because she was trying to teach him where babies come from is sort of disconnected. And the judge was essentially asking her, this is your chance, please offer me an explanation. And she says, I'm sorry for my conduct. And he says, no, I'm not, there's no, you can't say sorry at this point, but I'm trying to understand why you did this. And she says, I can't explain it. And ultimately he asks her again why she did it. She says, I can't explain it. I'm not a very good mother, which is just not a satisfactory answer to the judge's question.
That part is truthful anyway.
That part was, I certainly agree with, Your Honor. So it seems to me that the judge in this case did everything he could possibly do. My opponent obviously thinks that he would have sentenced her maybe differently than Judge McDade did. Maybe even some members of the court today think they might have sentenced perhaps differently. But that's not the standard. The question is, did the judge properly arrive at this sentence? Is the sentence reasonable, and did he comply with the procedural rules to get there? And in this case, he certainly did. As he said, this is a long-time experienced federal judge, and before that, a state court judge. And he said it was the worst case or one of the worst cases of child abuse he had ever seen.
Right, and because, of course, in state court, I mean, this is a child sexual assault case. This isn't just
right.
a pornography case.
Right.
And this woman was having repeated sex with her 7-year-old autistic son. And had this been charged in state court as sexual assaults of a minor under the age of 13, which it was, of a repeated nature, it would have drawn hundreds of years of exposure.
Your Honor, I really don't know what the state is. I don't deal with the state court in Illinois, so I don't know that. I would hope that would be the case. And why it became a federal case, I'm not sure either, although I can tell you our office is seeing more and more what I will call sexual, what you call and what I would call sexual assault.
It became a federal case because it was filmed, and so it constituted the production of child pornography. And it could be prosecuted without having to have the autistic child testify.
Right.
That's why it was
certainly
prosecuted in federal court and not state court.
That was certainly one consideration, although the filming itself might have offered the ability to not have the child testify. We've had those situations as well because the only issue then is was pornography produced. And you don't necessarily have to have the victim if you can see the participants in it.
You can get an appropriately lengthy sentence that is warranted based on the severity of the crime and also protects the public by prosecuting this in federal court as a child pornography offense instead of in state court as a child sexual assault.
Correct. I'm just saying I don't know what...
Right.
What
this sentence makes perfect sense right. and is highly reasonable under the circumstances.
I totally agree with you. I thought your question was why was it prosecuted federally, and I just didn't know why between the two sovereigns it was chosen to go federally. That was all. The court has no further questions. We'd ask you to affirm the sentence.
Thank you,
Thank
Scott. Mesa.
Thank you, Your Honors. Two quick notes. With respect to the psychological evaluation, I also wanted to just make it clear that was designed to handle the reasoning for the deterrence effect on Judge McDade's sentence. Everything seemed to hang on the fact that this would be a deterrence factor. We're not sure if she would do this again or how important that was in the decision. Secondly, as far as the substantive reasonableness, all of the comments, and particularly Section 4B 1.5, referring to the enhancement of repeat sex offenders receiving the maximum statutory sentence as opposed to a first-time offender. That's all I had. Thank you very much.
Thanks to all counsel. Mr. Mazak, you have the additional thanks for accepting the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement. The court will